Blog Talk Radio.
Halloween and midnight is soon.
Strange clouds cover up the moon.
The night is dark, the wind is chill.
Creepy things are happening, I can tell. Witches are flying out their rooms.
Mummies are stumbling from their tombs.
Spiders are crawling, they're everywhere.
Hey, I got spider webs in my hair!
Ghosts are rising from their graves. Bats are flying from their caves. Werewolves are howling, bells are being cast. Monsters and zombies arrive at last. Skeletons are dancing in the street. Black cats are hissing at my feet. Shadows are growing, cauldrons are bubbling.
Somewhere out there the blob is doubling.
There's an eerie fog on the lake.
Crones are cackling, potions are being brewed.
The breaking times are having a family feud.
The flying saucers are coming from the moon.
People are being replaced by pods.
Creature Con 2,
which is all about creature features with Bob Wilkins, John Stanley. And during the time of the big WowCon, they're partnering up to do that. And so that's going to happen May 18th and 19th, I believe, in downtown San Jose at the Convention Center, I believe. And you can check out the Big Wow on Facebook. Just look up Big Wow Convention, and you'll find the information there and stuff like that. So, you know, something to look forward to down the road. And it should be a lot of fun. What else is coming up? Hanging out, getting ready to finally edit my show for this coming week on Create TV in San Jose, Channel 15. And all you got to do is go online, look up Create TV, and you'll find the link to Channel 15, and you can watch my show every Thursday night, midnight, 3 a.m. East Coast time for all you horror fans and stuff like that.
Horror fans are always up at
3. Yeah, if you're up on the East Coast, West Coast, it's midnight. So even though it is a little tad late, but, you know, hey, it's all in the name of horror and fun and enjoying the information we try to dole out to the fans of all the horror fans and stuff like that. And, oh. And last but not least, I am going to be a special guest on the romantic poet internet show called The Corner this coming Tuesday at 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 East Coast time. And the author's name is Tim Lopez. He's written a few romantic poetry books that people can pick up and... I have his book someplace around here. I know I do. Yes. Through a Man's Eyes is his latest book, I believe. And it's all about romantic poetry and love and all that fun stuff. So I'm going to be talking about romance, I believe, this Tuesday. So, yay.
You are a romantic at heart.
Yes, I am. As long as I don't bury the body somewhere and go like, whoops, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to stake you. Was that my heart? Am I a zombie now?
You are.
Someone took my heart. I'm not happy. Feed me, Seymour. But no. But yeah, that's about what's going on for right now with me and stuff like that. So...
You're always on the go. Here's something that everybody always says when they talk about Joe Flynn. Oh, I love Joe. I love Joe.
I hope so. You know, because my birthday's coming up. If you really love me, people, send me birthday wishes up on my Facebook page.
He does have a PayPal account.
I know. Hey, I should start bribing everyone. For anyone who wishes me a happy birthday in a couple of weeks, I will give you a hug. I don't know.
I thought you were going to say a dollar.
I want 50 cents, actually. You know, a dollar may be a little too much.
Eric Dumas in the chat room right now says Joe is awesome.
Hey, Eric, thanks for coming in.
Ed loves Joe.
Eric is actually a very good guy. I've known Eric for a while. Eric used to be on a Now Live with me. And
yeah.
Eric used to do a show off of Now Live called Fear the Dead Radio. And he's looking to redo that. And so if any of you guys are horror filmmakers, writers, producers, directors, actors, actresses who want to promote your stuff, you might want to contact Eric Dumas and tell him you want to be on Fear the Dead Radio. And Eric will hook you up with that, you know. So there you go, Eric. You know, a little quick plug for you, my buddy.
Very cool. And Eric, maybe you can post the web link into the chat room. Also, let me just say he says thank you, Joe. Let me just say this right now. Hey, Alexander Beresford, here's something I want to say, because I know that the chat room, did you know, Joe, that we get like 93,000 listeners on other websites other than Blog Talk Radio?
I know we got other listeners, I believe, off of, different radio sites or internet sites that might be listening in and out of Blog Talk, you know, that you're, connected to, you know, like with different links of different websites that, you know, Blog Talk kind of like associates with, you know, by saying, oh, yeah, you know, we're on Blog Talk Radio. You know, it's like how our former website, Now Live, or stuff like that. I'm sorry, I got to lower the audio. But, you know, even though I'm a guest in the chat room and stuff like that, and it's not that I'm being rude by not being in the chat room and chatting with everyone, which I love to do, but, you know, it just like, at times I just go like, I'm just going to hang on the phone and, you know, just, you know, if anyone I know comes into the chat room and if I'm looking in the chat, I can say, oh, hey, hi, so-and-so. But, you know, hi, Alexander and Eric, you know, and Jake, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, that's the thing. And it's like, with all the different websites that maybe Blog Talk has, you know, sent out their links with everyone from different Facebook groups and all that and other websites, all these people are actually tuning in and, you know, or at least listening in to see what this show's about and stuff like that. And if they're a fan of horror movies or horror authors and whatnot, that's what they're here to listen about, you know. And then we try to do, you know, all the best, you know, and, you know, give them the answers or questions, you know. And as I said, anyone can call in, you know, if you want to ask Rick, if Rick's on the line, you know, once we get done talking to
him. So he's guaranteed to be here.
You know,
so the call-in number is 646-929-2899. We will be taking callers. Don't be shy. Rick's not. We've already talked to him. He's ready to roll. And he says he's drinking water, but I told him to put some scotch in that water.
Maybe he's drinking something a little stronger, which is okay, too, because, you know, you're on the internet.
Yeah, I told him. I was like, you know, don't be shy.
Yeah, it's not like you're on video. Actually, let's say on my local access show, and we have a video camera almost not necessarily in your face, but close by, and you'd be going like, sir, I don't want you filming me from this angle. It's not my best angle.
I'm drinking a bottle of scotch.
Yeah, I'm drinking tequila, man. Leave me alone. I want to drink and pot, you know. But, you know, that's the whole thing. It's like, you know, it's the internet. It's, no one can see you unless, let's say, you had a webcam and Blog Talk Radio had a webcam site everyone can see everyone on webcam and see what everyone is doing, which would be fun. But, you know, I don't know how many people would really want to be seen, you know, semi-naked or non-naked.
Yeah. Folks, I'm broadcasting new tonight. Be thankful the webcam is not hooked up.
Oh, yeah. You know, stuff like that, because, you know, something could happen and you might get embarrassed and you don't want people seeing that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Excuse me, was that guy just naked? You know, or was this woman just flashing me, you know, her boob?
Well, yes. Yes, she was.
Yes, she was, but I didn't see it because I was outside, you know.
Exactly.
But that's the whole thing. It's sort of like the whole fun thing about the internet. As long as you don't cross over, to me, certain lines, you know, I'm all good, you know. It's like, I don't think so.
So we're not going to see little Joe on the on the internet anytime soon.
Oh, you might see a little Joe, but you know, Joe is kind of like a short guy. You know, I might look like E.T. going like, phone home, Elliot. Phone home. You know.
You got me covered on that one.
Well, yeah. It's like as I tell people, I go, I am not the tallest guy in the world. It's like I'm barely, let's say, I like to say I'm 5'5", but I'm only really like about 5'4.5", 5'5". And so if anyone's over like 5'7", 5'8", 5'9", they're going to skyrocket over me. And it's like, hello, hi there, it's me, the Hobbit, saying hello. I'm just teasing America. I'm not a Hobbit. But I could play one on TV. Come on, please.
You're talking me up to me, Joe.
Well, I'm trying to be, you know, sensitive. I'm trying to be cool. I'm trying to be calm, you know.
Nick's got a really sore knee, and he hobbled over here, speaking of Hobbits. He's got an announcement to make real quick.
Oh, go for it.
Yeah, I've got I've got a few things to say really quick before we put on Rick Hodla, which is one of the best paperback horror writers that I kind of grew up from the 80s reading. Anyway, but we've got at Black Bedsheet Books and our online bookstore, downwarden.com/blackbedsheetstore, we've got a ton of things coming up for this spring. And we're kicking off our spring season a little early with S.C. Hayden, the author of our American Idol, Rusty Nails, Broken Glass. And then we're going to have our Vincent Price book come out soon, folks. The Price of Fear, Vincent Price in his own words, written specifically for this book. But we've got a lot of stuff going at the Black Bedsheet store, especially Brendan Ford's Merciless, which is still almost half off, folks, and a lot of incredible writers, some of the best damn horror writers in the independent world in the world are at Black Bedsheet Books. So you guys, if you haven't already, check us out. We've got ebooks and everything. Please, I'm begging you guys, buy our books. So with that, thank you.
I thought we would do this also, speaking of a Black Bedsheet Book author. Sue Dent, or as we like to call her on Francie and Friends, Sue fucking Dent. She did lose her house. She did lose her home this week, and we're really sad about that. And the main thing that she also lost, and this is the part that hurts her the most, is because everything else is replaceable. But there's four little things that were not replaceable in her home, and that was her four little kitties. And I definitely know of Wombat. In fact, Sue Dent would always call me, and she would always tell me the cute little things that Wombat did. So I thought, Joe, what do you think? Maybe a 30-second moment of silence for
And
Sue Dent's little kitties and... Oh, go ahead, Joe.
Oh, go ahead. We'll do 30 seconds, and then I got to say hello to someone who just entered the room.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we're going to do a little moment of silence for Sue Dent and Little Wombat and the rest of her kitties. Sue, we love you. Do you want to say any words real quick, Joe, about Sue?
Sue, I am so sorry to hear about your beloved kittens and... so sorry. Animals are special, and they deserve to be loved.
Yeah. So we'll do a quick little moment of silence.
You back?
We're back. We actually did that.
Yes,
yeah,
I know. I was being completely
silent.
That
was exactly 30 seconds. So,
oh, yeah.
The whole time I'm like.
No, I was going to go for longer, but I couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle it. The silence was killing me.
I was going nuts after 15 seconds.
I know.
Who admired that of us?
Oh, no. Sujan, again, we're so sorry.
We're really sorry about your loss. And
we
don't want that.
And in the chat room right now, I have one of my many friends and co-host of my former Now Live show. And this guy is actually a filmmaker from Canada. Hey, Hoser. But don't say that. But he actually has made two really cool little movies that I think everyone should check out. One's called Fallen, which has me in a picture cameo as well. And he actually also did another movie with me called First Invasion. And it's now a third film that I totally have to remember. It's called Memoriam, which is his latest film. Please welcome to the chat room Martin LaFrance. Thank you. There they are. And so Eric, meet Martin. Alexander, meet Martin. And Jake, meet Martin. And Francie, meet Martin. Martin's really great. He's a very cool guy. You know, he's a great filmmaker. And I respect the guy. He's very talented. So I just wanted to say hello to Martin.
You definitely got to love the people that you respect.
Oh, I do. I respect a lot of people, and, you know, and it's like, as I said, some of these people, you know, they've known me through the former shows that I do. Oh, The Monster Man, that's right. His former name on my show is The Monster Man. So that is his hosting name, The Monster Man. I didn't forget it, Martin. But, you know, again, everyone and the guests should take a look at Martin's films. You can check them out on YouTube and stuff like that. So, yes, I know. Man, that's, you know, I've known a lot of people. It's crazy, I tell you.
I know. Everybody loves you.
That's the craziness. And so, as we said, whenever Rick is ready, we are ready, I guess.
Okay, I think we're ready to call Rick. Are we ready?
Yep.
I think he's taking a couple of shots of scotch.
Maybe. Oh, right, there you go. Thank you, Martin.
We're calling him right
now. Hello, is this 911? Jeff Lynn is calling.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello,
Rick.
Hey, how you doing?
We are awesome.
Good here.
Welcome to the show. Our chat room is packed. And again, let me just make one quick announcement. All of you guests in the chat room, log in for a free account. It is free here on Blog Talk Radio. And we have a lot more people, like, listening on different websites. Go to Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com. Type in Francie and Friends. Join us live in the chat room. Our chat room is packed right now. We've got a lot of guests. Sign up for the free account. Rick!
How you doing?
We are awesome!
How are you
doing?
I'm doing all right. I've been, you know, it's kind of late for me here. You guys are still early hours of the evening.
We're the early birds.
Yes, we are. I admit it. Sometimes I just I wish I was at a later time, you know. But then again, I think back going like, whoop, no thanks.
Hey, we're prime time, baby.
Yeah.
Rick, that is Joe Flynn, Rick Hadwa. I do hope I'm pronouncing your last name right, because I'm really bad at names. Am I doing it right? Hautala?
Close enough. Hautala.
Hautala.
As if it was H-O-W. Hautala.
Hautala. I failed Spanish. And it took me a long time to say Universidad.
Yeah.
Universidad. That's the way it goes. Universidad. So, man, you are so awesome. Over 90 stories published. You're a publisher. Holy cow.
Yeah, well, like, I don't have any other talent.
Well,
you know, you have to do what you can do, and I only really have that one talent. Believe me, if I could do something else, I'd do it, because the writing life is, who was it, somebody famously said, the writing's life is a dog's life, you know?
It's a good thing
if you have some other talents and can try to do something other than write, because there are so many quotes about writing life and how miserable it is, but the fact of the matter is I get to sit home and make up goofy stories and people pay me, you know. So I can't knock it.
That's kind of cool that you kind of brought that up, because one of my first questions was to you, is there anything, if there was any occupation in this world that you could ever think of that didn't involve writing, is there anything that would stop you from writing?
No. No. Absolutely not. Unless I got into venture capitalism. It was, no, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That would stop me from writing, but other than that, I really can't imagine. Now, if I had it to do over again, would I do things differently? Absolutely. I made mistakes along the way, but I think everybody would be able to say that about their lives and their careers too.
But given the choice. I'm kidding.
Given the choice, I wouldn't and couldn't pick anything else.
Now here's something that is always said. They said the most miserable person in the world is a comedian, but the most happiest person in the world is a horror writer. Would you say that's correct?
Unless the most miserable person is a funny horror writer. No, I'm not. I'm not sure. I mean, I have found the vast majority of writers, horror writers that I know, seem to be really funny people too. There are very few of them who live up to an image of, you know, being dark and brooding and depressed and all.
Do you think they're getting their anger out? Because I will say this. I did date a comedian a couple of years ago. Miserable little guy. And I'm dating I'm dating Nick right now. Happy little guy. You know? I'm just wondering if, you know, maybe they're, do you think that you know, horror writers, they release their anger on paper rather than building it up inside, and you're like, I got to be funny tonight. Do you think that? I think that's great that you said that. You know, a lot of horror writers that are happy little people.
Yeah. I think it's because, you know, it's not so much a matter of if you don't laugh you'd cry. It might be if you don't laugh you scream.
Excuse me, where's that, you know, axe?
I feel
that anger coming in. I gotta write.
Yes.
Okay. And Jack's a dull boy. That's my quote.
Yeah.
Sorry. A little shiny.
That was a great quote. I loved it.
Absolutely.
That's great that you actually said that, is because you actually know horror writers that are walking around and you guys are happy. Is it because you guys are releasing your anger on paper? Not that you're really going to kill somebody in the future.
You know, the real horror is when we see our royalty reports. Then we're not so happy. Then we start screaming and, you know, getting out the axe and, you know.
I'm going to get that person.
Yes, yes.
Whoever wrote that check is mine.
Like in keeping with the Shining motif here, you know, those accountants, I must correct them.
Yeah.
They were corrected.
Yeah.
So, that's when horror writers get really scared, when they see the minimal size of their royalty checks.
Yeah.
Except for a couple of them. There's a couple who do all right. Most of us are slogging down in the trenches. There are very few generals and kings.
Yeah.
But you are one of the kings. I mean, you are like, I mean, think about it. You sold 1 million copies worldwide. You've done, whether you are publishing, which I got to talk to you about that one too. Aha, mm-hmm. See, I got questions for you. And
oh,
you are the Bram Stoker's Lifetime Achievement Award, baby.
I know, and I keep thinking that they made a mistake in balloting or something. I can't.
No,
I demand a recount.
Okay,
no,
let me go and talk to them.
No, you've got to live that. And I know we got to hear your acceptance speech.
My acceptance speech was really heartfelt. I really did feel like I didn't deserve it, and that there are plenty of people much more deserving than I, and there are friends who have, you know, writer friends who have died who I, you know, I truly and deeply miss. And, you know, that's where I guess the sadness comes in, you know, it's kind of looking back on this, but because,
yeah.
You know, my acceptance speech, the one funny line I had in there, intentionally funny anyway, was the difference between a writer and a pizza. You know the answer to that, right?
No, but I'm really on the edge of my seat for that one.
A pizza can feed a family of four.
That's right.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Because they say the same thing about a banjo player, too. So.
Now, here's a serious question I have for you. I mean, you just won the Bram Stoker's Award. You've won a couple other Bram Stoker Awards, right?
No, I never have.
Really?
I've never won an award.
Wikipedia lied to me. No.
Uh-oh.
They said I won a Bram Stoker Award?
Yeah,
no.
They said that you won a Bram Stoker Award.
No.
I've
never even made it to the final ballot on a Bram Stoker thing.
Really?
Because these clowns like Stephen King and Joe Lansdale and Peter Straub have books coming out every year too, and they're better than I am, and they always win.
No, I've read samples of your stuff. You are awesome.
Well, thank you.
Awesome. You're an awesome writer. You're an.
I am getting better. I will say that I feel like I'm getting better. And I almost think it coincides with getting the Lifetime Achievement Award, because up until then, I really felt like I just didn't have the common decency to stop writing, you know. And up until then, I just kept doing what I felt I had to do. Once I got the award and really felt, you know, a genuine career recognition, I kind of felt like, okay, I'm out of my apprenticeship, you know, after 30 novels and, you know, 60, 70 short stories and umpteen screenplays. I feel like I can say, yeah, I'm okay at this. I feel comfortable with this. But honestly, until recently, until the past 2 or 3, 4 years maybe, I really felt like I should have just had the decency to go away, you know,
no,
and stop inflicting. No, I mean, this is... this is the Scandinavian part of me that peeks out, you know, the Finnish darkness that
you're like one of the best writers ever. Honestly, you are. And everybody, you've got to read his stuff. I mean, you started out, you know, you were paperback, you were in the grocery store, and look at you now. I mean, over 90, am I right? Is that number right, or did you go up more since?
Well, now, see, that's it says 90 novels and stories. And
yeah,
so it's about 30 novels, you know, done or, you know, published or done and in the works or coming. And I don't know, 60, 75 short stories and screenplays and stuff. So 90 finished pieces, but a novel certainly is a hell of a lot more work than a short story. But even 30 novels, I mean, I can look at the archive shelves and see, you know, damn, there's a lot of damn books there. I've done all right.
That all came from you. Now, here's my question, because I work with an older guy, his name is Hal, and he likes to read short stories. And here's the thing, you know, everybody's attention span is, like, faster than what it used to be back in the day. Like, somebody could read, like, a 300-page novel story, and they're like, oh, I got it. That was awesome. Do you think that America's attention span, or not even just America's, but the world's attention span, because everything has to be fast. Everything has to be fast. We got to get it faster. Do you think it's better to write short stories now, or do you think it's better to keep writing the novels?
Well, there are two concerns, I think, in that. One, and probably the most important thing, is I think any writer should, in dealing with whatever story idea he or she has, you know, the story idea will determine the length. I mean, I get ideas for stories, and I'll go, okay, but that seems more like a novella than a novel, you know, or that's a short story idea, or that's a novel idea. That's something I could explore. And so I think, first of all, the writer has to let the story determine how big or small it will be.
Yeah.
And the second point, which is much crasser, is that if a writer wants to get paid and make a living and not have to have the day job and support him or herself with their writing, you really can't make a career on short stories anymore.
In
the 50s when there were... Yeah, well, back in the 50s, there were, you know... And even before, there were people who could make a living selling to the pulp magazines and even the slick magazines. But, you know, we're getting pay rates for short stories these days that are pretty much what people were getting paid in the 30s and 40s for pulp magazines, you know. I mean, when you get between a penny and a nickel a word, adjusted for inflation, you know, writers can't make it, you know, because...
Yeah.
Back in the day when a loaf of bread cost a nickel and gasoline was 10 cents a gallon, you know, if you got paid 5 cents a word, you could live fairly large.
Yes,
you
could.
Consistent.
You know,
but,
are those days.
Those were the good old days.
Those are gone.
Yeah.
And so then a writer has to kind of make a decision, I mean, the basic decision. Are you doing it for the love of the craft and the art? Or are you doing it for the love of the craft and the art has to be first, but also you want to make a living at it. You want people, you know, you want to tell good enough stories so people are willing to give their time and money and not feel like their time and money were wasted after they finished reading something of yours. So it really is a tough decision. And, you know, when I said earlier that I should have made different choices, I should have had a much better business sense than I did early on. I was really ignorant. I didn't promote myself. I didn't put myself out there. I didn't, quote-unquote, hype myself. I operated on the idea that, you know, if the book, if the story is good enough, people will notice and it'll stand on its own.
Right, and they'll find
and
you.
They, yeah, but they don't. You know.
Right, that's the whole thing.
People... Yeah, people only find what's put out under their noses. And
Do you find that way that people connect with internet and Facebook and, you know, do you think that there's more of a media to promote, or do you think that people might be getting sick of, like, oh, geez, they're making another post? What is your opinion on that? Because,
well,
I mean,
the thing is, again, see, I'm all for passing editorial muster. I think it's I'm still working and operating in the headset of, you know, my grandfather's world of publishing, where you get an editor, copy edited, and proofread, and galley proofs, and promotion of publicity, and all that, and that's all changed with the internet. But the problem that I see, the way I express it, is now instead of 100 people selling 1 million copies each, we have 1 million people selling 100 copies each.
Yeah.
And so if you do want to support yourself writing, I'm telling you, I mean, to be quite blunt, I would not want to be starting out as a writer these days. I think the challenges are immensely larger than what they were when I started out. And, you know, looking back now, I feel like I made several mistakes. And, you know, I mean, somebody with a real business head or strategic plan would say I made some miscalculations. I did what I thought was good and what was right and what was best, and some of that didn't turn out so right. Some of it did. I mean, you know, I can still sell a book. You know, it's harder than it used to be. You know, recently I have a novel, a mainstream novel, that I've been trying to sell now for 3 years. And my agent's response to it when he first read it, he said 10 years ago there would have been a bidding war on this novel, and now I can't sell it.
Yeah,
you know, so it really has changed, you know, the whole business. And it's, you know, people will... it's hard to stand out. I mean, I like they say that the Beatles couldn't make it today in music. I wonder if King and Kuntz could make it if they were starting out today.
Right.
Would they be so noticeably better that they would make have an impact? Or would they just be one of the million people trying to get seen, get found? You know,
that's a good question.
It's a tough time. It's a tough time. Plus, there are other ways people get their entertainment fixed now. They do it through video games and online content and stuff like that, which you need writers for, but, you know, nobody's making a million bucks anymore. People are getting, you know, livable wages if they're lucky.
Yeah, you have to fight your way to the top, and now it's like, you know, you and I'm just throwing out an example because I seen this video last week. You can make a video called Two Girls in a Cup, and you got 1 million hits. Millions of people have seen, you know, you're on Family Guy. Oh, what am I doing? You know, that's
right,
the way
right.
it is now. So I made a good point,
exactly.
right? You can make something so disgusting, and trust me, I couldn't even watch Two Girls in a Cup. Everybody's like, no, watch, no. You know, I hurled.
Well,
I couldn't even see the end of it.
That's it. Finding a market is the trick. And, I mean, you know, I'm finding that, you know, with the screenplays I'm writing. I mean, there's a couple of people, indie producers, who are interested in a couple of scripts that my writing partner Mike Steensland and I have written. And there's another thing we're doing through one of those things like, I can't remember what it's called.
Kickstarter or Indie.
Kickstarter, yeah. It's not Kickstarter. It's another one.
Right.
And I don't want to go into too much detail about it because we just finalized
one of those similar websites, right?
Yeah, similar
Honestly,
websites.
Honestly, I might be able to put you in touch with some people, and I would love to do that if you would.
Well, we're working with somebody on this particular project, but, you know, I have... oodles of screenplays that I'm just dying to get out to people. And,
I might be able to put in touch with some people. I'm sure Joe could, too.
Well, we'll have to take. We'll have to have a little conversation offline.
we will do that. We will do that. In fact, I'm sure that the people that I'm saying is probably listening right now. But yeah, I might be able to put you in touch with some people, and maybe we can make some magic happen. What do you think?
You know, I do have a bucket list, and seeing my name on the big screen.
Hey, we could try to do that. You know, we could just here's a webcam. Go at it. This is your life, Rick.
Rick, speaking of a big fan of yours, I got a big fan of yours right here in the kitchen, and he's doing a little dance, and he twisted his knee, and every time he goes on, he's like, ow, ow. So I got...
He me up in, like, this big ace bandage now, so half of me is like the mummy, but it sure feels a lot better. I don't know. I was up late, early this morning, actually, at about 4 o'clock in the morning, working on a computer and stuff, and I just got up, and I got up wrong for some reason. I mean, I'm not that old, but I certainly feel like it. It's just, it's weird how you can all of a sudden stand up and then, like, twist something. I think I twisted something in my kneecap.
Well, how old are you? How old are you?
How old am I? 46.
46. Well, you know, the warranty, they, once you turn 50, they give up on you, you know.
Yeah.
You go to the doctor and complain about something, and they'll say, oh, yeah, it's just getting old. That's the way it is, you know. Well, what can I do about it, Doc? No, nothing you can do about it.
Just
getting old. Take some of
leave.
Don't call me because there's nothing I can do for you.
Yeah.
And we'll call you in the morning.
Yeah, we'll just wait till you... I'm going to be 64 in a week or two. So.
Oh, happy birthday. Uh-huh. I'm catching
up. I'm going to be playing that Beatles song when I'm 64 all day.
When I'm 64. That was the year I was born.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember
that. Oh, yes, my birthday's coming up in less than 2 weeks, so I'm a happy camper.
All right.
You know, I'm 46. You're going to be 64, so that's like just spun around a little.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's really weird. It's really weird how numbers matter sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh, Francie says that we've got callers. Really quick, though, just for everybody that's listening, I got Rick on the Francie show, because I'm a genuine fan of his. Now, I went through a period of my life back when I first started getting published, and I was like one of the names that used to be on mass market paperback racks with Halloween Floor and Prairie Serpents Prey and stuff under Nicholas Randers. But it was during that era, and it's kind of, I call it the zebra era, but among those that I was a big fan of, and I swallowed up their books, was like William W. Johnstone and Rick Hodala. And most of them, Zebra, like, saturated the market at that time. And I just collected those books, and I became a fan. And then, you know, as soon as my career started, like, jump-starting over the years and everything, I kind of became more of a, especially since I became a publisher, I did a lot of less reading except for, you know, things that I needed to read instead of for leisure. So I kind of, and then all of a sudden, you know, I turn around, went to the World Horror Convention last year, and Rick Hodala got a Lifetime Achievement Award. And I'm like going, where have I been? It's like, wow. And then I had to kind of look up to see what you, I had to like do some research on you. And then I was telling Francie, check out this guy. I used to read this guy. Look what he's doing nowadays. And that's so cool. So...
A lot of people who were writing when I started out, you know, they gave up, you know, they went back to their day job or decided, you know, they couldn't deal with the business, because the business is brutal. It was brutal when I started out, when we started out. It's brutal now. I think it's more brutal now, but it's always been tough. It's always been tough to make a living.
Yeah, and you had a good point when you were talking to Francie, too, about how... Or would you say about how it used to be there would be like 100 books and a million readers,
yep.
And now there's a million readers,
yep.
And I mean, you know, that's true as a publisher too. It's just so hard to it's hard to sell your own stuff, let alone somebody else's. And And I got the
royalty report today for The Wild Man, and I was almost in tears.
you messaged that to me about it. I was going, oh, that is too bad.
You know, but it's the way it is. It's the way it is. It's hard to get noticed, and that's why I'm keep trying with the e-books. I just recently signed with Crossroad Press to do a bunch of my books as e-books, and still trying to crack Hollywood and just working on it, because like I said at the beginning, there's nothing else I can do. If I could be a doctor or a lawyer or a fireman or something, I would do it. I'm sure if I had something to fall back on, I would have by now, if I had it. But I never had it, so I had to keep fighting. And, that whole bit about success is getting up one more time, then they knock you down. I mean, I don't want to tell you how many times I feel like I've been knocked down, but I keep getting up. I don't have the sense to stay on the mat. I'm in the corner saying, cut me, Mick, cut me.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I think that I live that every day. It almost seems, there's purpose. I'm purpose driven, but some days it just seems kind of useless anyway. I go through the motions sometimes just because I'm still trying to, climb that mountain again. And I thought that I climbed it last year. And, it's like.
Yeah, and then you find out
the writer.
Foothills. It was one of the foothills, and now the whole mountain range is still in front of you.
Yeah. Cool. We do have some callers.
We did have a little bit of time on our show because you're doing so great. I hope you don't mind that we added some time. And, we are the number one in our time slot right now. So, we figured that we would add a little bit of time. You're number one, baby!
Yeah. Okay.
Adrian!
Here we go. We got some callers. Hold on.
Hello! Is it about a honey, boo-boo waits on nobody.
I got an intern. Area code 612.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear somebody.
This is Usman Malik from Florida. I don't know if Rick recognizes my name.
The phone went funny right when you said your name. What's your name?
This is Usman Malik from Florida.
Usman, I sure do. Of course I'm.
Hey, how are you?
How you doing, man? Oh,
good,
man.
Good.
Great.
I just couldn't resist making a call when I knew you were going to be on the air.
Hey, I love your posting.
Well, we're very happy that you called in.
Well, thank you for being on air. I was just going to, I'm not going to waste your time. Rick and I can talk all night. He knows that. what would you say would be your best advice for, budding writers or people who want to write these days?
John Irving said it really well. He said you have to get obsessed and stay obsessed. You just have to be unrelenting. You can't give up. You, no matter what, the odds are against you. Everything is arrayed against you, and you just have to keep pushing and keep pushing. It helps if you have a spouse or live with somebody who has a lot of money, or a really good day job. That's
honey, I'm writing. I'll see you when you get off of work.
Right. But just persistence is the only key. And it doesn't matter if you get turned down. You see what you listen to what people say and take it. If it makes sense, take it to heart and learn from it. If they are obviously not smart enough to recognize that you've sent them a good story, fine. But if the story has some weaknesses and they point them out, work on those weaknesses and just never give up. Just never give up. Have faith in yourself and, even to the point of being delusional.
That sounds like excellent advice. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Hey, it's great talking to you, man. I know.
I'm really, really psyched about it.
I'm flipping out.
Well, have a good night. I'll let you talk with the other people.
Well, wait, before you hang up,
here's a question.
And I do see 714 is calling in. 714, I'm about to pick you up. What do you say about that four-letter word in the literary world called writer's block?
What do I say about it?
Yeah. That is the worst thing to deal with.
No, I've never had the luxury of having writer's block. I make a distinction between an author and a writer. An author is a white-collar job, and a writer is a blue-collar job. And if you're a writer, sit down and write 2,000 words or 1,000 words, whatever your goal is. Set a goal and write it every single day, 5 days a week, or if you're really obsessed, 7 days a week. But sit down, do the work. Don't get up until you've done your job. Imagine if you're a car mechanic and they bring a car in and say, this car needs a tune-up, and say, you know, I'm just not feeling inspired. I'm just not feeling it. I just don't think I can tune that car up. You know, maybe tomorrow if inspiration hits me. Yeah, bullshit. You get fired in a minute. And a writer is the same thing. An author has the time for writer's block and to go through the drama of being an author. A writer has to sit down in the chair, put your fingers on the keyboard, and write until you reach your goal every day, every writing day that you can.
It takes a lot of discipline, though, wouldn't you say? Just a little bit?
It takes a lot, but that's what I said to Asman, is that you got to get obsessed and stay obsessed. You can't let up. And, you know, it's the wannabes and you know, how many kids want to be rock stars? And they never sit down and realize that they have to practice their instrument, you know, 6 or 8 hours a day, every day, and push and push and push. They think it's sex, drugs, and rock and roll. No, it's practice and rehearsal and work. And
yes, it is.
Yeah, and other people, you know, other writers who don't have that commitment, they deservedly should go because they don't have the commitment to writing. You have to just persist, and if you'll know if you're a writer, you know, because you won't be able to stop in the face of any kind of disappointment and rejection. And I'm not saying disappointment and rejection don't hurt. They hurt a lot, but you get past it, you know. There's a reason we like movies like Rocky. The what?
It makes you only get better.
Exactly. And, you know, there's a reason, you know, movies like Rocky are a hit, because that's what the human spirit, the human nature is to persist and persist until you either win or you have a glorious defeat.
That's right. Go down, Rock. I've been hit.
Damn good point.
Okay.
Holy crap, you're like, you should do inspirational speaking too.
I know.
Yeah, I'll be like Joel Orenstein. I'll be the Joel Orenstein of horror fiction.
Yeah. There you go. My honey boo boo is like saying now, right now. Because this person. Okay.
Ring! Ring! It's honey boo boo! Your newest BFF! I'll pick up your phone!
I told you. Area code 714, you're live.
Hey, that honey boo boo clip has got to go, Francie. I hate that thing.
Wait.
Hello! Is about a man? Honey boo boo waits on nobody.
There you go. She said it.
You know, there's proof right there that American culture is dying.
I was just going to say that is a classic example, and Honey Boo Boo is the poster child of the decline of Western civilization. It's just fucking horrible. Hey, Rick, I wanted to ask you, but what happened?
Wait, is this Brett?
Of course it's Brett, sweetie.
Brett is about to get married, and you know what?
Uh-oh.
Wait, Rick. You have been married for how long?
To Holly, a year and a half. But I was married about 30 years before to the mother of my children.
So is marriage a great thing?
When you find the right person, absolutely. I don't care if it's gay, straight, or interspecial. You find the right person. You find the right person, and man, that brings it home. That's what counts. Children and love.
Yep.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Brett.
Well, thank you.
Yep.
Congratulations. Rick, thank you very much, Rick. I wanted to ask you earlier in the show. You talked about the ecology of the publishing world, and you've been a published author for quite a few years. And you brought up, Stephen King, Dean Koontz. Now, back in the 80s, there was, for a budding author or an author that was seasoned, that had been around to get published, there were very few outlets for publication at that time, 70s, 80s.
Right.
How do you feel about, in the modern times that we live in, with private upstarts, like what Nick's doing with Black Dead Sheep Books, a lot of authors now have an avenue without having to retain a lawyer and, you know, go after, you know, have a large publishing agent get their works out there. How do you feel about the way things are now with the availability of smaller publishers that are willing to purchase, I mean, to publish without as much of a hassle?
I think it's a great thing. I think it's a great thing, and the fact that there are, you know, the thing I hadn't, other than Nikon, I don't go to any conventions, and Nikon isn't a typical convention, so I had no idea what was really going on in the field for a good 20 years or so since I'd been to a World Horror or, you know, Lunacon or BossCon or something local, and you know, it used to be, basically what I think the small presses are doing these days is that they're taking the place of the mid-list authors in the major publishers. The major publishers used to have a scale of, obviously, the lead, the big seller, and then the mid-list author, and then the bottom-list authors, and, you know, the people that they just filled the racks with. And mid-list authors are gone from the major publishers. They only want bestsellers or nothing. And you're only as good as your last ISBN. And what I saw at Salt Lake City, at the World Horror in Salt Lake City, is a really vibrant small press that seems to be taking the place of mid-list authors, for mid-list authors who used to fill in the majors, and now that's where they find home. And now, trick is, you know, who can break out from the small press to a major press. And that's you know, that's a toughie. That's a tough trick to pull.
Do you see the smaller independent publishers as a springboard for an author to the larger publishers, perhaps?
I couldn't guarantee it, but I would hope so. Yeah, I would definitely hope that. Because, you know, still the majors are going to pay, you know, at least $15,000 or $20,000 up front for a book. You know,
yeah.
and small press can't do that. They can't compete at that level. But,
right, they can't. They don't have that kind of financial backing or guarantee.
Right,
for an author. Also, one thing that you had mentioned earlier in the show was authors, you know, back in the day, 70s, 80s, like Dean Koontz has been brought up. He is one of my favorite authors. He's not necessarily horror or sci-fi, and he's somewhere in the middle, and I like his style. The stuff that he wrote in the 80s, like my favorite book by him was Lightning. Okay, I loved it. It had a sci-fi aspect to it and had a lot of suspense. But as you mentioned earlier in the show, if a book like that were to be presented to a publisher modern day, it might not well be taken or bought because it's just, it doesn't fit, even though it was a great book.
Right.
Right. So it's a matter of timing, because Dean Koontz, honestly, you know, I've got a lot of his books, and I noticed that in the 90s, he started kind of getting lazy in his writing style. He was kind of complacent with where he was in the publishing world, I guess, maybe. I don't know. That's just conjecture. But I did notice that, you know, every author has to pursue new avenues and explore and reinvent themselves. But I just felt that a lot of the things that he had written after the 80s kind of dropped off, or maybe it was just me. As I grew older, my interests changed. I'm not sure. But back to the point I was making, it's just like if you were to, you know, give a publisher, you know, the first couple of chapters of Lightning here now in 2013.
Yeah, could it sell?
It might not have been picked up. Do you think that's
very
more
possible?
Is that more of the publishers and their readers to determine what the public's going to like, or are they going by the graph and the feeling of what the public is buying at that particular time, what they're reading?
Well, I think publishers still look for slots. They want a romance, they want a mystery, they want, you know, a genre, because even though bookstores are going the way of the dodo bird, they still need to know which shelf to put the book on when it comes in. Oh, this goes on the horror shelf. This goes on the sci-fi shelf. And so they tell you in, you know, a lot of writing classes and books and stuff, they'll say don't mix genres. But Dean is a perfect example of somebody who is successful because that's exactly what he did. He mixed genres.
Yeah.
He mixed horror and psychological and ghost and sci-fi.
That's an even better way to go about it, because you attract more of an audience. Although you kind of narrow down the way, you kind of shun yourself away from a specific genre of reader. But at the same time, you pick up other readers of different genres. It's kind of a mixed bag, I guess.
Right.
Well, it's a danger, too, if you know, you have some recognition. I mean, you know, I've had a hell of a time trying to sell my mainstream novel. And my former agent, who's, you know, still a real good friend, he said, his reaction to it, he said, well, it's structured like a mystery, but there's no mystery. And I said, no, it's just a novel. I said, well, no, it's just a novel. It's got mystery, it's got romance, it's got humor, it's got, you know, this and that. And he said, Rick, I can't sell just a novel. That was his exact quote. Rick, I can't sell just a novel.
What did he mean by that?
Well, because people, you know, need a slot that they can put this in, you know. And I mean, I'm probably going to be in trouble next year because Matt Costello and I have a book coming out from St. Martin's that's a straight up science fiction novel. I mean, and not just science fiction like Blade Runner or something. It's straight out space opera, adventure space, you know, adventures in space. You know, and I wonder, you know, well, the sci-fi people aren't going to like it because who the hell are Costello and Howdle would be writing science fiction? And people who read me for my horror, you know, for my horror and psychological suspense, it's been called, are going to, you know, what the fuck? I don't want a science fiction novel by him, you know. So
yeah.
But, Here's something to think about. I mean, you are Bram Stoker's Lifetime Achievement Award. Would you find it easier to sell books with that kind of a award? Damn it, you're the shit. Honestly,
right,
you are. I mean, you are in the position, and it's because you work so hard. And I've seen your autobiography. I mean, you struggled, and you've clawed your way, and now here you are. You are on the top of the ladder. Would you agree?
Maybe recognition-wise within the field, but certainly not sales-wise and, you know, collectability-wise and stuff. Well, right. I mean, that is the point. That's the message I want to leave the whole thing on here is buy The Wild Man. You know, search it out. It's on Amazon. Buy The Wild Man. Buy Little Brothers. Buy the Unsigahunk book. You know, buy Indian Summer. You know, there's a lot of stuff out there that, you know, the mass market presses apparently aren't interested in any longer, because they've got the racks full of James Patterson novels, you know? Oh, did I mention He Who Must Not Be Named?
That's John Link, I believe.
I feel like Stewart on Mad TV going, I say yeah, and you say yeah. No, you know what? These are the people that, like you and Nick and, you know, even Stephen King and Clive Barker and everybody, you guys built the horror industry. You know, you guys are what horror is about. Whenever I say horror, people think I say horror.
Whores?
Well,
horror.
Yeah.
Horror.
Well, I made a comment once. I made a comment once in an interview. I said, I'll prostitute my art, but I won't be a cheap whore.
Yeah. Is there a distinction?
I want to be the classy call girl of horror. I love horror.
Darn it.
Be the pretty woman.
No, but, you know, it might
I'm
be my Southern
Suzanne's
here in
comment
California.
In the chat room, and Suzanne put it brilliantly. Bookstores only stock books from large established publishers. They'll only stock books from independent publishers if they beg, cry, and offer their firstborn, and then they may just carry one or two books before sending them back. Thanks,
right.
Sue.
That's
right.
True. With Booksmith, you know, gone, and I mean, not Booksmith, Borders,
and Barnes
long
and
gone,
Noble.
And Barnes and Noble is, you know, it's certainly breaking up at orbital decay. It may not have incinerated yet, but it's shaky, and you know. But how do you get your book noticed on Amazon? Who's going to say, you know, oh, I went to the Amazon site and I saw Rick's new book advertised. You know, you can't put something in the front store, the front of the store online. So,
right.
Again, you know, it's how do you get noticed? How do you get recognized?
Exactly.
And,
it's like when Nick was had his first book published under Nicholas Randers, Pray, Serpents, Pray, he was going around to local grocery stores and bookstores and just walking in and saying, hey, is it okay? You know, are you guys cool with me? Could you put this on a rack? And
yeah.
It's the same thing with any blue-collar guy back in, you know, 30, 40 years ago when we go looking for a job. You show up and then you present yourself and you sell yourself face-to-face with the owner, manager, whoever. Now it's a lot different in, I think, any kind of way that any person's working to make a living. Whether it be blue-collar or artistic or what have
you've
got to
have
you have
Facebook,
to deal with
you've got to have Twitter.
Yeah, you've got to deal with
yeah.
with the new medium that, you know, I mean, if I want to go get a job at Home Depot or some crap job like that, I can't just walk into a Home Depot. They'll say, well, go home on your computer and go to a website and fill
right.
out the application and hope that it gets recognized. There's no way to stand out from everybody else.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, Nick was actually giving you a thumbs up with that one.
what's that?
Nick is like, yeah, that is the way it works. You know, I do. I did have a little book published, and you know, I'm not gonna publish. You know, Rick, I would love to send you a copy of my book free of charge. You know, but I did have a little book published, and people that know me from work, I do have a daytime job. I'm not gonna say what it is. And people are like, wait a minute, you got your own radio show. You have over 180,000 listeners plus. You wrote a book. What the hell are you doing here? And I'm like, you know, the only way that you can really make money is if you're Clive Barker, which is very respected author. Love him. Stephen King, love him. You know, and Harry Potter. But the thing is that, you know, and everybody thinks, okay, if you write a book, you're set.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Not the way
yeah.
it is. You've got to claw your way. You've got to climb your way up to the top. And, you know, you walk into Barnes & Noble, how many books are on the bookshelf?
Right.
Well,
3 million?
But the difficulty, too, is you have to do it gracefully. You can't go in there and be obnoxious and say, put my fucking book on your shelf or I'll blow the place up. You know?
Or I'll kick your ass. Well,
especially these days. These days you can't.
You can't do it.
But you have to be gracious. You have to be, writers, I think a lot of writers really have trouble selling themselves because there is a strong element of humility and insecurity in the writing. I mean, I never finish something without having the thought, well, it's a piece of shit, and even if it isn't, nobody cares. That's usually the first thought I get when I finish writing something.
Then I get
beyond that, but the writing has a lot of insecurities. The writer who thinks they've got it made, that they're just the best thing going, are full of shit.
Anybody who is endeavoring artistically, it doesn't matter if you're a writer, or if you're writing scripts, or if you're an actor, or if you're a musician, or a stand-up comedian. I mean, stand-up comedians are some of the most insecure people ever.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who is artistically inclined has an insecurity for some reason that seems to be, like a staple of personality with anybody who, is doing anything artistic. There is a need to be recognized. That is a part of the motivation. And it's something that no matter, I used to write music when I was younger, and I've done some artistic things, with Photoshop and Illustrator, just kind of dabbled with stuff. But I noticed that that's that part of me that no matter nothing is ever finished. No matter if it's finished in a publisher's eye or a director's eye or anybody, it's in the mind of the one that's creating it. It is never finished. It is never perfect. It will never be what we wanted. It won't ever be. So you've got that insecurity that's always going to be there. And like you said, when you finish something and you go to turn it in, you think, God, this is a piece of shit. But that's not what everybody else is going to think. We're wrapped up in our own minds with that.
Right, right. And that's I think most writers and artists are like, 2-year-olds who, wipe shit on the wall
absolutely.
And say, Mommy, look what I did. Look what I did. Isn't that pretty?
With mine, I always considered my two biggest critics was my mom, who would tell me that I just wrote shit on the wall, or myself. Would you consider that, like, you were writing something, or are you thinking, okay, would my parents like this?
Well, my mother wouldn't read my books because of the swear words. And my father never read my books. My father's never read my books because he was a straight-laced businessman and stuff.
Yeah,
but I'm really lucky to live with Holly, who's a writer too. And she doesn't pull any punches. I mean, when I finish something and she reads it, she'll say, "Yeah, I like this. Change that." Or I finished a novella that, honest to God, called The Big Tree. It'll probably never see the light of day. Because when I finished it, I thought, man, this is the most personal, intense, best thing I've ever done. And Holly read it, and she finished reading it, and I said, well, what did you think, Holly? And she looked at me, she said, well, it's not terrible. And everybody else who's read it, including two publishers who asked to see it, read it and said,
Holly is your wife now, right?
Right, right.
So,
yeah, my previous wife never read me either.
The best thing to go with is what you feel the worst about, and that would be widely received.
Probably because I mean every one of my first readers and an editor in England and an editor in the United States, who both said, "Oh yeah, I want it. I want to publish it." Read it. The editor in England said he threw it across the room after 30 pages. He wrote to me. He said, "You said this was subtle. It's not subtle. Nothing happens."
Man,
and,
I have so enjoyed you, Rick. I got to get you back. We're about out of time, and that British woman is about to cut us off.
British
I want
woman.
You back. Rick,
all right.
Rick.
Well, no more. Please, no more Honey Boo Boo. I've never been exposed to Honey Boo Boo before.
Oh,
no,
wait,
I
hello.
Know.
Ring, it's Honey Boo Boo. Just know it's clear this, so pick up your phone.
The decline of Western civilization.
It's over,
Johnny. Brother.
It's over, Johnny.
Okay,
they killed
I'll tell
me
you what. If you come back, Rick, I will fire Honey Boo Boo as my intern for that week, and I will get, oh, hold on. No.
Sophia Loren.
There you go.
Hold on, I'm looking.
I had a dream last night that Holly and I had a threesome with Zoe Deschanel. So
Holly is. I gotta tell you because I wanted to speak to you a little bit about Holly. She finally befriended me on. Not finally. I am friends with her on. She is a very lovely woman.
All I can say is the universe smiled. You know?
You lucked out. Poor
you should interview her some night. You should have her on. She's published
a couple of
books. She's published some stories. Have her on. Invite her on.
Well, how about next week?
That might be a little soon for her to pull her head together. But well, that might be a little
right,
quick,
Mark.
But see what she thinks.
Is she there? Is she there?
No, she's sound asleep. She has a day job.
Guess who I'm getting the first week of February? I didn't make the Jeremy Lynch.
Honey Boo Boo?
Honey Boo Boo!
Really?
Please, no. I'd have to go off the world. So on.
Hello! Anybody there? Honey Boo Boo went to nobody!
We play a game today.
No, Jeremy Lynch, the star of The Twilight Zone, the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Valerie and the Hogan's family.
Oh, yeah, the kid from The Twilight Zone.
That's a pretty good get, as they say in the business.
Yes.
That's a good get.
Should be.
There is
a lot of fun.
Dimension beyond that which is known to man. It is a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, and it lies between the pit of man's
having
fear.
Fun with my switchboard.
Yes,
I noticed.
You have a little too much. Is that really the Honey Boo Boo? I've never seen the Honey Boo Boo.
Yeah, she's right here. You know, here's something that if people are disturbed about Honey Boo Boo. Did you know that they just signed up another season with TLC, and it's going on right now, and of course is number one. But did you know that they're being offered like $150,000 per episode, and this family is not gonna like buy their self riches. Instead, they're putting the money back to their community. They're putting it in Honey Boo Boo School. They're not taking the money.
They should save a little for Honey Boo Boo's therapy when she gets older.
That's right.
That and don't you think that they could like buy a better better?
It's Honey Boo Boo. Just know it's so pick up your phone.
Buy a better double wife. You know,
I don't know. Thank God I'm innocent of all charges brought up against me in any court of law. No one heard anything.
Yeah, okay.
Her mommy married her
brother, but it didn't affect her none.
Couldn't they take some of that money and have Honey Boo Boo's mom get like a better toe or something? Buy a new toe.
She should get a plastic toe.
She should get something, man.
Oh, it was run over by a forklift. I swear.
Yeah,
I
was that
bunch
of bugs crawling out of her nails?
Well, thanks, Martin. Thanks, Eric. Thanks, Alexander, and everyone else. Sue Dent.
All right. I have a question. Who's been drinking while we've been doing this?
Go ahead. Shoot away.
Who's been drinking while we've been doing this conversation? Because this has gotten completely off all of us.
All of us, I swear.
This is the way it goes every Sunday night on our show.
This is insane.
Save me.
I just picture the
picture
the guy in Alien who's wrapped up in the cobwebs. It just says, "Kill me, kill me,
kill me now."
Rick, you didn't hear the opening song we played for you, did you?
No, I didn't. I hope it had nothing to do with Honey Boo Boo.
No, it doesn't. Thank God. It's a really good song.
I didn't hear it.
Speaking of cobwebs, are you ready? Are you ready, Rick? Here it is.
All right.
All right. Brace yourself. Don't hang up on us.
Okay. I promise not.
Okay. All right. This
I may throw up, but I won't hang up.
I'm telling you, you're going to love it because it suited you. And Nick actually picked this out.
It's Halloween and midnight is soon.
Strange clouds cover up the moon.
The night is dark, the wind is chill.
Creepy things are happening, I can't tell.
Witches are flying in their brooms.
Mummies
I give
are
up.
Assembling
I yield.
From their
I yield.
Tombs.
There I played Honey Boo Boo, didn't you?
Hey, I got spider webs in my hair!
Come on, it's a great song.
Give me some Honey Boo Boo as a cleanser on that one.
Okay,
oh, wow.
Okay. Here we go.
Sort of like a high colonic here. I need a high colonic.
Yes.
Oh, come on. Everybody in the chat room loved it. They were like, oh, that was fantastic.
Wait, that would be, so compared to that Honey Beats, Honey Boo Boo.
Ring, ring, it's Honey Boo Boo, your newest BFF, so pick up your phone.
Is that supposed to be the ginger to cleanse the palate before your next piece of sushi? What the fuck?
I'm innocent.
Are we offline now? Are we off air?
We are still being recorded, but we're off the air.
We're an archive.
This is kind of like an after party.
This is sort of like the director's cut.
Yes.
I should have done this for your opening song.
Okay, tape rolling. Anytime you want.
Hi, this is Michael Jackson.
This is Vincent Price. Michael Jackson is...
a thriller. Do we both say it?
Say it together.
Why did Michael Jackson sound so gay saying that? But yet Vincent Price is like, oh, thriller.
Yeah, Rick, this is the after show.
Okay. I feel violated. No, this has been fun. This has been fun. I haven't laughed this much in a long time. I'm telling you.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Martin's still telling us we're on the air, actually.
Oh,
we are.
On the air?
Yes.
Oh, God. I probably
but you're safe, Rick. If anything goes wrong, it's us. I'll just say, you do.
I'm
what do you think you're doing on Blog Talk?
Nothing.
We're destroying
no, this.
No, this
is. This has been. This has been fun, but I don't think I don't think we can turn this back to serious.
Oh, there's my British woman. She just interrupted us.
Who's this British woman? Of which
she's the one that cuts us
off. She's on Blog Talk Radio.
Yes.
Rick, you should do your own Blog Talk Radio show.
I should?
Yeah.
No. No. I'm lucky that I can get up and function and write for the day. I really am. That's really, literally, I can't say this enough. That's all I can do. That's the only thing I can function.
Well, we can help you.
I have a hard time going out in public. You know, I mean, it's not like I get nervous or anything, but it's like, oh, I have to go to the post office and see people. You know, oh, geez. you know?
Yeah,
I have to go to the grocery store and I might have to talk to people. I don't want to do that.
I
want to stay home and live in my head.
People were approaching me and my whole words was, please don't talk to me. Please don't talk to me.
Yeah.
I think we're snobs.
No, I don't think it's snobbery at all. It's just like, please don't remind me about the real world that's out there.
That's right.
I'd rather not think about what's out there. I'd much rather spend the time in my head reading or writing.
Okay, so I'm not a snob?
No, you're not a snob.
Oh, good. Because I came back from the laundromat with Nick, and I was like, I think I'm a snob.
That's an oxymoron right there. I came home from the laundromat and I feel like a snob.
Yeah.
I don't understand that one.
Yeah, Brett, I'll call you after the show.
We call it the Suds Palace. It's the Suds Palace. It's not the laundromat.
I think I'm getting a phone call. I think I'm going to be getting a phone call after the show. I'm going to get a scolding.
Brett, you missed it. Last week, Nick did laundry, and he left the laundry still in the laundry basket, and I was putting the laundry away, and like a couple of days later, I was putting away the laundry, and there was a little, like, slinky pair of black lacy underwear that I know if I wore, I would be scratching all day. So I, like, walked him out into the hallway. Nick is so happy I'm not a jealous woman. But I thought I'd play the jealous woman, and I looked at him. I was like, who is this? And he was like, he had this, like, he went white. And he was like, I don't know. I was like, why were they in our bedroom? I don't know. And I was like, Nick, I'm just kidding. They were mixed in with our socks. And he was like, gross, I touched them.
I have no idea as they were. I swear to God.
They were yours.
The previous woman who had used the dryer, you know.
Woman. And, you know, I'm not a jealous girlfriend, and I'm not going to, like, get upset if I find this. And luckily, they were kind of binded in with our socks. I hope I don't get athlete's foot from that.
Or athlete's crotch. You might get athlete's crotch.
I was sitting there, and I was like, I see them, I was like, wow, these are not my underwear. And I know that Nick knows that these are not my underwear because these things would make me itch. So I'm going to go play a little trick on them. And I, like, walked out with a stern look. It's like, who's are these?
That's really sexy. These
I don't know.
That's sexy.
Very good.
So it was really cute. He was like, do I explain or do I deny? I like this. And I tried to play it off, but I couldn't.
It's like, do I tell her the truth or make up this elaborate story that's a lot more interesting than the truth?
He's luckily they're wrapped up in my thoughts. Actually, you know what? I trust him. And I'm not the jealous girlfriend. You know, when I see Nick check out a girl, I'm like, yeah, I seen that. What did I do? I was looking at her shoes. No, her shoes are down there. You were looking at her ass or her boobs. I'm not stupid. Enjoy it.
You can't blame a man for being a man anymore. You can blame a
dog
for being a dog.
So I'm not going to be jealous. If Nick comes home to me, then that's all I need. Wait, is he Peter or Brett? You know him.
Well, look, it's 12:30 my time, and I should be toddling off to Slumberland here.
Rick,
this has been fun.
Awesome.
This has been insane. I haven't had this much insane fun since Nikon.
This was a good interview?
This was a great interview. This was insane, and it's the only way to do it.
I'm going to play you in my...
Does he have anything that he'd like to plug?
Yes. Promote.
Get the plugs out. What do you got?
Well, people should go to Amazon, and they should order The Wild Man, my latest book, and they should check out Indian Summer, and they should be ready for both Chills and Waiting are coming out from Cemetery Dance Publications real soon. So they should watch for those. And they should buy a lot of my books to encourage me to keep doing what I'm
doing.
They should.
Because you are a fantastic man.
Well, you're a fantastic woman. This has been fun.
Oh,
you're welcome, Rick.
Blush. I would love to have you back on, and I'm sure that Joe feels the same way, right, Joe?
Yep, I'm here. I just got clarification. We're now off the air and everything like that from my friend Martin, who's also a filmmaker from Canada. And he wanted to thank me.
Oh, this is going to go in archive.
Yes, he wanted to thank me for the shout-out. And he said, by the way, good show. So thank you, Martin. And thank you, Rick.
Oh, thank you.
Thank
you
being a trooper with us and surviving Honey Boo Boo.
Barely.
Oh,
barely.
Oh,
the ending of the apocalypse has begun.
Rick, I was going to play this as our opening song, and Nick said if you do, that Rick will disown the whole radio show. Are you ready for this one? It gets worse than Honey Boo Boo.
Okay.
I'm eating tough.
Okay, I will stop. Yeah, Nick said that if I played that you would totally disown the show. So I'll tell you what. We're still going to be live on
me. I'm a tolerant man. I'm a very tolerant man.
I'll tell you what, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to play you out with a really cool song. We're still in the archive, so I promise, you know, you're safe.
This is right. Going out live.
I'm going to play you out with a really, really kick-ass song. I just got to find it on the... Nick, I can't find it.
I'm terrified.
Here's my other intern.
Huh? Hello? Who is this?
I'm still trying to find my...
She's still got her finger on the Honey Boo Boo button, doesn't she?
Please.
Okay, here we go. All right, I have got us going out with a really kick-ass song. You're going
to
thank
me. Rick, it was nice talking
Rick,
to you, man.
Rick, don't hang up.
It was so great
soon.
Talking to you.
Do,
I'm
right.
going to listen, but is this goodbye after the song? I'm gone,
yeah.
Right? All right. Yep. Adios, muchachos. Thank you very much for inviting me. This has been more fun than I anticipated. And I'm sure my laughing
and, thank you, Rick, for coming
my laughing
on,
and yelling.
Yeah.
All right, Rick,
fun.
Don't hang up because I got a kick-ass song for you.
All right.
You got to hear it. It was a kick-ass show, so you get a kick-ass ending.
Hire me a rapper who can fill in the
you guys. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Is that Joel?
Yeah, that was me.
Joe! Don't you love Geek Talk, Max?
I will talk to you guys next Sunday for sure.
Yes.
And everyone, have a good week. Be safe. And don't forget, send quarters or nickels, dimes to the Joe Flynn care of the Honey Boo Boo Distress case coming to a court near you in the near future. I don't know. I'm just teasing. But again, everyone have a great week. Be safe. And, and don't forget, catch me on the talk show Tuesday night, 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 on the corner. You don't know what I'm going to talk about. I really don't. It's about romance, so maybe I'll read a little poetry. I don't know. And shoot out for the shout out for Franny and Nick. So you never know.
Give us a little piece of poetry right now.
Yes. There once was a lady from Nantucket who couldn't see Honey Boo Boo from afar. But as soon as she turned on TLC, she realized Honey Boo Boo was nearby.
Ring! Ring! It's Honey Boo Boo! Your newest BFF! I'll pick up your phone!
On that note, I am out. Everyone have a great night. Thanks, Rick. Good night, Francie, Nick, everybody else. And again, I want to thank Eric and Martin and Sue Dent and Jake and Alexander for hanging in with us tonight in the chat room and all the guests.
And don't forget, who are we going to have in the first week of February?
Jeremy Lynch.
Jeremy Lynch.
There you go.
I want my poster voice, but don't tell Pete. His poster was... Have you seen the cock video that they're cocky? Yeah, I think.
Yes, I did.
That is so funny.
It is.
I wish I would have seen that when Keith Coogan was on the show. That was funny.
Oh, you could.
We're going to talk all about that.
Yes.
That was funny.
Okay.
I love you, Joe.
Love you too, guys. Have a good night, everyone. Bye.
Should I send this out with the Vincent Price just for the hell of it?
Okay, tape rolling. Anytime you want.
Hi, this is Michael Jackson.
This is Vincent Price. Michael Jackson is...
a Thriller. Do we both say it?
Say it together. I say inviting you to. All right. Yeah.
Okay.
Anytime, just roll.
Hi, this is Michael Jackson.
And this is Vincent Price inviting you to
the thriller.
Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. The demons squeal in sheer delight. It's you they spy, so plump, so ripe. For though the groove is hard to beat, yet still you stand with frozen feet. You try to run, you try to scream, but no more sun you'll ever see. For evil reaches from the crypt to crush you in its icy grip. The foulest stench is in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no mere mortal can resist the evil of the Thriller. Can you dig it? Ha 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 ha